Are we live? Yes, we're on. Good evening. Maybe a little closer. Welcome out on a kind of chilly Wednesday evening. We are beginning a new class this evening, Abraham. Now, I don't know if you've been in the teaching business, but when somebody says, you want to do this new class next year? Oh, sure. You know, that's all kinds of time. And you think about it, and you think about it, and you work on it a little bit. And as time goes on, it's getting closer and closer, and uh-oh. And you try real hard to get something together and hope it flies. We've already had the technological failure. I wanted to use a laptop here, but it didn't want to talk with the communication system, so we're on the regular fallback here. But this should be interesting. But before we get started, let's open up with a prayer, and Jason's going to lead us in prayer. Amen. Thank you. I don't know if you all heard Bill saying that he's got the results that his tumor has shrunk down to 50% of its former size. So that's real good progress, answered prayers. Abraham. Okay, suppose you were brand new to this and you didn't know a thing about Abraham. What would you do? Google it. Exactly. What do you think you get when you Google Abraham? No, we get Abraham of the Bible. But Abraham is, among modern scholars, agreed to be a mythological creature. That is, a fabrication, a story, to justify something or other. I didn't get all the details, but something like when they came back from the Babylonian captivity, they had to say, well, we belong here and you don't, to the people that had remained. So that's some kind of rationalization to say whatever they say. Now, I don't agree with that, but that's the kind of stuff you'll find online. You can find a lot of good things online, but be very careful. In fact, I read a lot of things, various commentaries and such. In this part of the Bible, they tend to be really sketchy. They don't go into much detail. And sometimes they say things that, well, they're not there in the text. And that makes me real uncomfortable. Brian had given me a book that somebody wrote, which was supposed to be a biography of Abraham. I read the first few pages, and it started saying things that I never found in the Bible, and I thought, no. So there are a lot of things you can read, but be very particular about what you accept. Josephus, you've all heard of Josephus, Jewish historian. He goes into quite a bit on this, but again, when you read his version versus what the Bible says, sometimes it seems like he's kind of whitewashing some things, making things look better than what the Bible says, or he embellishes, and that's not so good either. Here's a sort of list of topics that we may touch on. They're not strict chronological order, and that text is a little small. At least it is up there. But this evening, I'm going to try to do some background. After all, you read all these names and places. Who are they? Where are they? Where did these people come from? That's part of what we're going to try to look at this evening, in building up to the point where Abraham comes on the stage. Things like go. God told him, go. Get out. Get away from your family and your father's house. Go where I tell you. Twice told tales. Any ideas? Two times he said, she's my sister, not my wife. And it's interesting to compare those. I said, Abram's Lot's choice. Abram gave Lot the choice, but it was Abram's choice to give Lot first pick. To the rescue, Lot was taken away by the four kings of the east, and Abram went to the rescue. On the way back, he met two kings. Melchizedek, king of Salem, and Barah, king of Sodom. It's interesting to look at how those two interactions are quite different. Of course, they got new names. He was Abram, became Abraham. There was a new covenant, and the sign of circumcision that was given as a sign of the covenant. Laughter. When Sarah heard that she was supposed to have a child at the age of 99, yeah, right. And her son was named Isaac, which means laughter. The haggling that happened shortly after that over how many righteous men does it take to save the city of Sodom? That's an interesting part. Impatience. Sarah and Abram, well, Sarah in particular, got no child. Here, take Hagar. And all that came out of that, people say that decision has affected us down to today. It's an amazing one. Your only son, when God tested Abraham at this point, and said, take your only son, Isaac, and go sacrifice him in the place where I'll tell you. Then the death of Sarah and the haggling over, not really haggling, but the negotiating over the burial place, which was to be her burial place, and then Abraham, Isaac and Rebecca, and Jacob and Leah were all buried there in the cave at Machpelah. The episode of getting a wife for Isaac, how he sent him back to his land and his people, Don't you dare take a wife for him from the people of Canaan. And don't you dare take him back to where I came from either. Hagar and Keturah. And then there's a lot of Abraham in the New Testament. Of course, you know, Lazarus died and went to Abraham's bosom is one thing. In John chapter 8, there's a pretty intense interaction between the Jews there and Jesus as they're saying, we have Abraham as our father. And he said, you're not acting like it. And there's a lot more. So I think we've got enough material to fill up 13 weeks. But I'm going to need some help because I don't know it all by any stretch. There are lots of people sitting in this auditorium that are much older in the Lord than I am and have much more knowledge of these things. And besides, we need a good discussion. So I invite you to discuss. Let's start at the beginning. Adam to Abraham. Now, you'll recognize a few of these names anyway. Everybody knows Adam and then Seth. And you get down to number 7, Enoch or Henoch. The one, he walked with God and then he was not. And of course, Methuselah, 969 years, the oldest person recorded ever. And then Noah. You get to Noah, and it's kind of like a reset. Because all this stuff that happened up until then, they all got wiped out. So if we go, before we leave that, Abram appears in the 20th generation. This is according to what's presented in Genesis. If you look in Luke chapter 3, at the genealogy given there, there's one more stuck in there, another Canaan. Now, these spellings differ all over the place. You go to different translations, and you get all kinds of different spellings, which makes it difficult to follow. But in Luke 3, there's another one in there between Arpachshad and Shelah. So you get the reset at Noah, and from Noah to Abram, we've got another 10 generations. Which, why did I even put this in here? It's just in bigger font. But we'll focus on this part. When I would read the Bible, and I would read these things of, who are the Chaldeans? Where did they come from? Who are the Ammonites? Who are the Amorites? Who are the these? Who are the thats? We'll see a lot of those this evening. I had this idea, let's put together a timeline and see how they all line up there. The first 10 generations are cut off to that side. And their lines are long. 500, 600, 700, 800 years. This one, the third line down from the top, that ends in 950, that's Noah. And this is following the genealogy of Christ. Shem, his son, was born when he was about 400 years old. And Shem was about 100 years old when the flood happened. And then his son, Arpachshad, was born 2 years after the flood. Now, in doing this, I found out not everybody agrees on this. You'd think, you just read it there and put the numbers together. Apparently, people that have done this from the Septuagint end up with about twice as long a timeline. So this looks like, let's see, according to this timeline, Noah is about 1,000 years after creation. Abram is about 2,000 years after creation. According to this other timeline where for some reason they essentially double it, you get about 4,000 years from creation to Christ. Sorry, did I say that right? I did not. You get much more than that, something like 6,000 years. I have not looked into that. I don't know the details of it. It's just something I read in the process. But you can see how here, after the flood, lifespans start to shorten. But it's interesting to look at the overlap. Today, you have the parents, the children, grandchildren, if you're lucky, and a few actually see great-grandchildren. Let's see, Arpachshad there, the one that ends in 600? No, sorry, Shem, son of Noah, lived 600 years, and basically all the way down to Abraham and maybe even Isaac. That's about 10 generations. So your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren. We don't usually think of that. You know, you say, okay, this one, then this one, and this one. But when Abram was born, that was right around the time that Noah died. They may actually have overlapped a little bit. So let's look at some of the peoples and where they came from. Noah had three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, or Japheth, if you prefer. I've been, you know, reading a pronouncing Hebrew glossary, and I've been spoiled. I get used to saying them that way. But Japheth had seven sons, some names that may sound familiar: Gomer, Magog, Madai, Yavan, Tubal, Meshech, and Terah. Well, maybe two of those sound familiar. Gomer has a few sons, and Yavan has a few sons, and particularly for the sons of Yavan, in Genesis 10, it says, these settled the coastlands of the nations. Other translations say that a little differently. But that gives you a hint. We'll get into more. You can look at these. Now, this is from Josephus. Josephus was 2,000 years ago. So he was a little closer to it and was seeing some of these transitions that were happening. And what you find is it went from the Hebrew or Aramaic into Greek. And so what gets passed down to us is often the Greek version of these names. And if that's how you see them and see them on the maps or learn about them, you have no idea who that was connected to. Well, Josephus makes some of these connections for us. Gomer, the Gomerites, came to be called the Galatians. And they're in central Turkey, what's Turkey today, central Anatolia, or Asia Minor. Magog, the Magogites, or the Scythians. That's southern Russia, sort of to the north and a little bit to the west of Mesopotamia. Medai gives the Medians, the Medes. We all know about the Medes, the Persians and the Medes, way over there to the west, and they rise up somewhat later. Yavan becomes the Ionians, which are the Greeks. So we're starting to see how these sons and their families spread out and peopled the land. Tubal, the Tubalites, Iberians, which this is not authoritative, but we know of the Iberian Peninsula, Spain, Portugal. again, not authoritative. Meshech goes through the name change and became known by the Greeks as the Cappadocians, which is in Eastern Asia Minor, or Eastern Turkey. We'll see a map here with a few of these names on it. And Tiras gives the Tirasians, or became known as the Thracians, which at the, you know, the Straits of Bosporus, between the Black Sea and what becomes the Mediterranean, just to the west of that is Thrace, that region. And so that's where they settled. Gomer's sons, Josephus had it as Ashkenax or Ashkenaz, gives rise to possibly the region that is now Poland, up in that area. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but there are two main branches of Judaism, the Ashkenazi and the Sephardic. And the Sephardic are those that are mostly around Israel, and the Ashkenazis are those up in Eastern Europe today. And again, not authoritative, but that name certainly sounds like it. Rifath became the Paphlagonians, which is north central Anatolia. Again, we're about to go to a map. And Togarmah became the Phrygians, western Anatolia. Okay, map one more. Javan's sons, Elisha, became the Aeolians. Where exactly they were, I'm not sure, but if there's a cluster of islands called the Aeolian Islands, and it's just north of Sicily. Several small islands there. Tarshish led to, if you want to say it the way the Greeks did, with all of the seas being K's, Kilikia, or Cilicia, and Tarsus, the region where Paul was from. Paul of Tarsus. So, I don't know. And Ketimus or Ketim gave the name to Cyprus. It was Ketima, and there is still a city there, or there was at least at the time of Josephus, Ketias, which held that same name. So what happened was, you know, as they spread out and languages changed and such, and certainly by the time the Greeks came in and renamed everything, a lot of this is lost. But you can see where some of these folks are going. We have Thracia up there in the upper left, Paphlagonia at the top, and going across the middle, you have Phrygia, Galatia, Cappadocia, Cilicia, and then the bottom rectangled Cyprus. So these are regions where these sons have gone, built families and built whole nations, really. That's one son. Son number two, Ham, or Ham, had two sons, Phut and Mithraim. Some spell it P-H-U-T. The New American Standard does P-U-T. The Bible doesn't say anything about the descendants of Phut, but it's generally recognized that he went to Libya. And had the city of Cyrene. You know, remember Simon of Cyrene who carried the cross? Mithraim is considered to be the father of the Egyptians. In, you know, a couple thousand years ago, they referred to the Egyptians as by that name, or some version of it. Now, this whole list down here, I wonder about, because they all end in I-M. It doesn't necessarily say that that is a suffix, But I am is to Hebrew like S is to English. It's the plural. So you start saying things like the people, Ludim, the people of Lud, or Anamim. One interesting one in here, second from the right, Kasluhim, was the father of the Philistines. So from Ham through Mitzrayim, you get Kasluhim and the Philistines, and we know how they come into play. We're filling in a lot of the gaps. There's still a lot of the map that we haven't hit. Probably the more famous or most important one to the story of Abraham is Canaan. And he had sons Sidon, Het. Now, Sidon or Sidon, you know of the city on the eastern Mediterranean coast, Sidon, Tyre and Sidon, the Phoenicians in that area. Het comes into play somewhat later because when Abraham was trying to purchase a burial place for Sarah, he was dealing with the sons of Het at Hebron. Now, here's where we get into just names of the peoples rather than the others. The Jebusites, the Amorites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, those are all, they all appear there in Canaan, you know, the region of Canaan, along with these other names, which that's the only time you ever see them in the whole Bible. So we have this statement here in Genesis 10. The territory of the Canaanite extended from Sidon as you go toward Gerar, toward Sodom and Gomorrah and Admah and Zeboim, as far as Lasha. Now, I don't suppose you can see it that well from the back rows, but here we have a map which was put together in French for the area of Canaan, and the names on it are in Greek. So all of those names that were just listed there, outlining the area of the Canaan, the area of Canaan, was from Sidoma or Sidona, number one up there at the top, down toward Gerara, number two down at the bottom, and Gaza, number three on the coast. And number four would be Sodom, five is Gomorrah, six is Admah, seven Zeboim, and eight Lasha, or Lasha. So basically that whole region outlined that way, that was the land for Canaan, where his sons populated largely. Third son, Shem. You know what Shem means? Name. Modern Jews have a practice. They do not say the Lord's name, you know, the tetragrammaton. They just do not even attempt to pronounce it. They're afraid they might do something wrong and, well, sin because of it. And so one of the ways they avoid that is to say Hashem, which is the name. So Shem. Now the ones that are in the brighter blue, those are following the lineage of Christ. So Noah, Shem, Arpachshad, Shelah, Eber, and Peleg. Those running down through there, that's part of the genealogy. But here's where there's something very interesting. These five peoples, those five sons, give rise to the five Semitic peoples. You know of Semites, you know, we all hear about anti-Semitism. Well, actually, for the languages and the peoples, these five become the five Semitic peoples. Down there at the bottom, we get to Joktan, and 13 sons. And now their settlement extended from Meshah as you go towards Sephar, the hill country of the east. And the best I could get out of that is basically it's down along the coast of the Indian Ocean from about the Gulf of Suez over to the Red Sea. These five Semitic peoples, these are the five sons of Shem. Elam gives rise to that region that has that name, that's just north of the Persian Gulf. And we're going to run into his descendants when we get to the part where the four kings of the east come and pretty much wipe out the Jordan Valley. Chedorlaomer was one of those kings. Ashur, second son, according to Josephus anyway, he lived in Nineveh and named his people Assyrians. Arpakshad, it was the Arpakshadites, and these became known as the Chaldeans. Where do we run into the Chaldeans? Ur of the Chaldeans, where Abram was called out from. Much later, we get the Chaldeans with Babylon and some mix in there. But that's about 1,200 years later. Lud, all of the Anatolian region, you know, again, this is Asia Minor. And Aram, northern Mesopotamia and Syria. Different translations will say different things. Some will say Mesopotamia, which is a Greek word. I don't know why it's even used, but they'll say that. Some say Padan Aram, which is Field of Aram, or Aram Naharaim, which is Aram of the Two Rivers. I sound like I know something. Don't believe it. I really don't. If somebody talks funny, be suspicious. It's okay. You can laugh. All right. This is by color where these people, where these sons went. The reddish stuff up at the northern side are the sons of Japheth. The blue running around the Arabian Peninsula are the sons of Shem. And the yellow into Egypt and a little bit over on the eastern side of the Arabian Peninsula are the sons of Ham. And there's a greenish spot up there sort of in Mesopotamia, which is the sons of Eber, or Eber, who is a couple generations down. But Eber is considered to be the father of the Hebrews. So from there, we go on. We have 5 minutes. And I have one slide. This is Abraham's family tree. And we'll get into this in quite a bit more detail as we go on. But Abram's father, Terah, had three sons, Abraham, Nahor, and Haran. Someone very close to me expressed, how shall we say, a little dismay at the number or the closeness of the marriages that we see here. there's a lot of marrying cousins. Well, Abram married Sarah, or Sarai at the time, and she was his half-sister, the daughter of his father, but not the daughter of his mother. And then Nahor, Abram's brother, married Milcah, the daughter of Haran, his brother. And then you go on down from Nahor and Milcah, they had Bethuel, whose children, among others, were Rebekah and Laban. And Isaac married Rebekah. So he's marrying his first cousin once removed, depending on which way you look at it. And then their son, Jacob, marries Laban's daughters, Leah and Rachel. So they were keeping a pretty tight family. It was one of those bushes that grows all back and forth together rather than spreading out. But, you know, a little bit later on, when you get into the law of Moses, there's the prohibition against marrying anybody that closely related. But at this time, there was nothing against it. Any thoughts, comments? Was this at all interesting? I mean, everybody's bored silly, right? Ozzy. It's a gift. Lois tells me I shouldn't do that. She gets very annoyed with me when I say that stuff. Any other comments? We have 2 minutes. Well, the first source is the Bible. Beyond that, picking bits and pieces, Josephus was, I would consider, pretty reliable on these things. There are other histories and things. You know, archaeology has done a lot toward identifying things. Like they'll dig up a city and they find thousands of clay tablets and their business dealings, and they refer to another city and certain names. And so they verify that this is a certain place, and they're able to identify it as something that was in the Bible. There are some cities that have continued on to today, like Beersheba, which most people pronounce Beersheba. It's four syllables. But that's still today. I mean, that city is still there today. Some of the ones around it, the little ones that probably got covered over by the desert, they're digging in them, but until they find something with writing on it that says, this is a name, and they can start to connect them, they just have to say, well, it's a good candidate, but we don't know. But some of it comes from archaeology, and some just a... Well, I was fascinated by this stuff because, as I said at the beginning, when I would read through these things and it's just names, it didn't mean anything. But to start to put them together and to see the families and that these people came from these and so on, it really fills it in. We'll do more stuff with maps, but you know, this is, I hope this is the worst night. Mike.
This kind of puts it into perspective. You can read the Bible and just listen to it. You don't really draw all those connections. But you see it like set up as a family tree, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
It begins to take a whole other
it would be huge, and you've got dozens of generations in there. I don't know. Tom? And this was only a few of them. There were many, many, many that they just gave a name and that was all. But those went on to have children and children and children and children. And I don't know if you know your math, but geometric progressions go, whew. You know, 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2, and you've got, I forget, that was about 64. You know, a few more times and you're in the thousands and then the millions and so on. It doesn't take that much, and especially when they can keep, I mean, their lives are not 20 years of childbearing. It was 200 or 300 years. We have run out of time, but thank you for your attention.